driving out, like way out, like an hour outside of town at 2 a.m. in a blizzard to go do a uterine prolapse. And I get there and she's not caught. So we end up stretching her between an ATV and a truck with toe straps. And I'm just like, this, like, nobody teaches you this in vet school. This is never in the curriculum, like how to survive the situation.
These are stories of outdoor adventure and expert advice from folks with calloused hands. I'm James Nash, and this is the Six Ranch Podcast. This episode of the Six Ranch Podcast is brought to you by DECKED. That's D-E-C-K-E-D. If you don't know what that is, DECKED is a drawer system that goes in the bed of a pickup truck or a van, and it'll fit just about any American-made pickup truck or van. It's a flat surface on top, and then underneath, there are two drawers that slide out that you can put your gear in, and it's gonna be completely weatherproof, so I've never had snow or rain or anything get in there. There's also a bunch of organizational features like the deco line, and there's boxes that you can put rifles or bows or tools, all different sizes. There's some bags and toolkits. There's a bunch of different stuff that you can put in there. But the biggest thing is you can take the stuff that's in your back seat out of your back seat and store it in the drawer system, and it's secure. You can put a huge payload of a couple thousand pounds on top of this deck drawer system. There's tie downs on it, so you could strap down all your coolers and your four wheeler and whatever else you've got up there. It's good stuff. This is made out of all recycled material that's 100% manufactured in America. And if you go to decked.com/sixranch, you'll get free shipping on anything that you order. This show is possible because companies like DECKED sponsor it. And I would highly encourage you to support this American-made business and get yourself some good gear.
Thank you so much for doing this. This is Adele Shaw. I'm James Nash's little sister. He let me take over the podcast today. And I invited Brooke Hoffman here because Brooke, I think your story is so cool. One, I relate to a lot just because you grew up here, mm-hmm. left here, and chose to come back here mm-hmm. after having gained skills and assets that could contribute to this community. Mm-hmm. And I think that so many of us little girls growing up loving animals were thinking, oh, I'll just become a vet mm-hmm. because that's what I want to do forever is be around animals. And I know for me, I said that. And then I looked at vet school and I was like, maybe I'll stick to ranching. but you could be maybe making more money and working a little less somewhere else. And you chose to come back anyways. And I think for all those little girls who have those big dreams of becoming a vet and still having a family and still choosing to be in a place and doing a thing that they love, you did that. Mm-hmm. So can you maybe start with just growing up here and your dad, who we had on the podcast before, mm-hmm. was a vet, mm-hmm. and you still chose to become a vet. And just kind of start there, like growing up here and what that was like.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's so fun to be here. Yeah, so I guess I was born and raised here in the county and obviously spent a lot of time at the vet clinic, like you mentioned, because my dad is also a veterinarian here, who I have the pleasure of working with, which not many can say. I guess the pleasure and the working with their dad part. So yeah, I was born and raised here and, you know, was involved in everything, 4-H, FFA, sports, all of that jazz. And then I always wanted to come back. I never thought I would go anywhere else, which is a little bit different, I think, and was kind of reassuring. I'll get to it later, but I had some thoughts about going somewhere else for a little bit, but always knew I wanted to come home eventually. I loved growing up here. My family has a little bit of property outside of town, so, you know, grew up on a farm, and my dad and I spent a lot of time together, like hiking and packing in the backcountry. And then we're both archery hunters, so we do that together. And so the county always, you know, was like everything I ever wanted to do is here. I remember my brother asked why I wanted to come back here because he was just shocked that I would want to come back because he did not. And I told him, where else would I go? Everything I like to do is here. But it was really fun. I really enjoyed growing up here, and it was really hard to leave to go to college, but I always knew I wanted to be a vet. So when I graduated from high school, I went to Oregon State for both undergrad and vet school. And I really loved it there, actually. It's a pretty small town for as big of a university as it is. Definitely a lot bigger than here, but still relatively small. And I love it's, you know, it's like originally an ag community. And so it felt like, you know, there's a big ag presence there, which I really liked. So that was a little nicer transition for me. So I did a degree in animal science with a pre-vet option and did that in college. And then decided I got in a couple places for vet school and decided to stay where I was because I had a church community and like local community that I'd kind of built there, and I felt really good about staying. So and it's the smallest, at the time it was the smallest vet school class size in the country, which I really liked. I really liked this, how small. There were like 56 in my class, I think, so we're a pretty small group. So I went through vet school, and then like you said, it was very, you know, they weed you out every year like leading up to vet school because it's very popular. Everybody wants to be a vet at one point or another. And then either the tuition or the length of schooling seems like it gets people at some point or another. Or it's just super competitive, so just being able to get in is hard. So I did that, which was very challenging. Vet school is very hard. And then I graduated during COVID, which was very exciting. It actually worked out in my favor in the end, but I had been kind of debating whether or not, you know, everybody tells you to go somewhere else first to practice. But I just really felt like, you know, the community was really excited to have me back, and I was really ready to be home. So I decided to come home, which worked out great because of COVID. So it would have been a lot more stressful to go somewhere else. But I came back then. So that was about 4 years ago. I graduated and moved home. I went to work with my dad and then his business partner. So there's three of us there at the clinic. That's been so great. Those guys are such awesome mentors, and they just love their job, which is hard to find in the vet world these days. There's a lot of vets that are really unhappy with their, you know, either their job or where they're at. And so it's nice to work with people that really enjoy it, because you just don't see it as much anymore. And you are correct, the timing wise with vets are, it's a lot easier, and I don't know about easier, if that's the right word, but I would make a lot more money and I would have a lot more time off if I worked in a bigger city. So that was definitely a choice coming back here. So we are a mixed animal practice, truly. So every day is really different. Like today I had dogs and horses and a rabbit. And so you never know what's going to come in, and it's calving season. So you really never know, which is fun, but also, you know, we need to provide an emergency service for our clients, and the nearest referral hospital is like 3 to 4 hours away. So that's just not an option here. A lot of clinics have started doing that where, you know, your general GP practices will close down, and then just have an emergency center close by, but that's not an option here. So, and that's really important to our clients, obviously, to be able to call when they have an emergency. So yeah, that's kind of my story a little bit. And I really do enjoy, my dad was a big advocate for me to keep going to vet school, because there's a lot of times you want to quit because it's so hard. And then for me to come back here, he worked really hard to get me back here because he really wanted to work with me. And so I'm thankful for that, because I really love it and I'm really happy to be home. And I really can't imagine being anywhere else.
Yeah. Do you want to tell us maybe one of those times during vet school? Because I think it's easy to imagine that that's really hard, but I mean, you're basically becoming a doctor, mm-hmm. right? So I think a lot of people are really familiar with maybe some of those schedules and demands of going to med school. Mm-hmm. But do you want to talk about maybe one of those times in vet school when you're like, this is crazy? And how many of those 56 people that you started with, did they actually all graduate?
Yeah, not everybody I started with graduated. But they would, at least in like the first year, they would fill that spot first year or two. I think they would fill it. So I'm not sure. I think we ended up graduating. It was kind of hard. They get students from other schools that come in and do their clinicals with us. I'm actually not sure the number we graduate. We also didn't have a graduation, so it's a little tricky.
Oh, because of COVID.
Thanks, COVID. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think we were pretty close to that number. We lost maybe a couple students like the first year or two, and then after that, everybody stayed, which was nice. You hope that the weed out process is pretty much done in vet school. You know, everybody's made it that far, and so it was nice. Most people made it. As far as a time, I mean, it was probably like an every week occurrence. As far as vet school is really, it is. It's medical school essentially. They say, I don't want to say it's more challenging than medical school. I think it's just really different, but you're learning for not every species, but, you know, most species. So definitely dogs, cats, horses, cattle, and then they throw like sheep and goats are getting more popular, and we learn about those too. And then you do cover like exotics and some other species as well, just not nearly as much. So you're, you know, and even a cat and a dog are significantly different from each other, completely different illnesses, how you treat them, all that. So just that's just a huge volume of information you're covering in vet school. And so the first 3 years are, so I did 4 years of undergrad, which is pretty typical. And then, you know, in that time got all the prereqs required. I got my bachelor's degree, but then also got my prereqs for vet school. And then once I was in vet school, the first 3 years are like classwork pretty much. Third year, they kind of start to throw you into some like sort of clinicals a little bit. And then fourth year, I mean, like a full calendar year is clinicals. So you don't get the summer off. You do a full year of clinicals, which is like electives, required clinicals, like large animal surgery or small animal medicine or whatever. And then also your like internships that you choose to do. So it's kind of a mixed bag and you're all over the place and stressed all the time, but it's super fun because you're actually doing things that you learned for the first 3 years. But I feel like that was the hardest part is you're learning so many different things all at once. And you learn it at such a deep knowledge, you know, they say that you lose a lot of what you learn just because once you get out into practice, it's a lot more like practical and general. You're not seeing a lot of, they call like zebra diseases, you know, like the crazies that you're only going to see maybe once in your life. Where in vet school, they cover all of it for all species, maybe even ones you're not going to see. And so it's just a lot of like, you're just studying all the time and taking exams all the time. So it's a like, you know, stressful like any graduate program, but just a huge amount of species differences, which makes it a little extra challenging.
Yeah, I would say that's a little extra challenging. What is an animal that you got to work on that would surprise us?
Probably I thought the guinea pig was odd, or a hedgehog. I saw a hedgehog one time. Yep.
What was wrong with the hedgehog?
I think it just needed its nails trimmed. Everyone was very excited about it because we just don't see hedgehogs.
Right. Because you also do that, right? It's also like teeth cleaning, nail trimming.
Oh, yeah. Just all kinds of preventative thing. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it depends on the species, but obviously for any of them, what you prefer is like preventative medicine if you can do it. So like vaccines and wellnesses, things like that, that's across the board. But then obviously a lot of what we do is things that go wrong or emergencies or whatever, which is going to happen no matter what.
Right. Mm-hmm. Interesting. I loved what you said. I think I can speak for anybody in this community that we have incredible vets that you guys are, as a team, they're so incredibly educated and, you know, knowledgeable, and the skill set is so high. And yet what I think is really amazing is just the level of compassion. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's been several different times, even for me, that I can think of calling one of you, knowing that you're taking that call without a billable hour in place, and you can either be reassuring, ask all the right questions, help me through. I know at one point your dad, I just had a cow that wouldn't get up, right? And he gives to be able to take that call, stay present with me, help me through that situation to know if that cow's okay. Is it okay to flip her over, right? Is it okay to roll her? Like, how am I going to do the least amount of harm mm-hmm. here if it is a West Nile situation or a tick down or something like that, mm-hmm. or if this cow just fell down and hurt herself, mm-hmm. right? And just having those relationships is what I think is so special about coming back to your community, right? Mm-hmm. You talked about not wanting to leave school because you had built that community there. Mm-hmm. And coming back home, I know for me, it was just this big sigh of relief mm-hmm. of family and community. And that makes everything easier.
Yes.
I think. And I know for me, I really, really value that there is such an honest and compassionate relationship mm-hmm. in our vet clinic. Mm-hmm. And you're the next generation of that, mm-hmm. which is pretty incredible.
I tell people that all the time. I was just talking to a vet student about it. It's like, you know, you're going to make mistakes in, they call it practice for a reason. And it's inevitable that that's going to happen. But your reaction is huge. Like, in this community, you know, you hope, and I have seen it over and over with whatever the situation, but they know that you're out to, like, do what's best for them, you know, like, mm-hmm. Nobody thinks I'm out to get them or their animal. And I think that, you know, accountability, but also, like, on both sides, but also just what you're saying, like, you guys know that we care about you and your animal so much. And that knowledge just sets such a great foundation for everything else. Whereas if you're in a place where you don't know the client or the vet either direction, then it's a lot harder to trust that they know what they're talking about. Or, like, on my end, is the client, like, understanding what I'm saying? Are they going to listen to what I'm telling them? Are they going to turn around and sue me? You know, that's just not something that we deal with here, which is really a privilege in this world today, because it's has changed, the dynamic has changed quite a bit. And so it's kind of twofold. I think, you know, the culture at our clinic, I think, is just amazing. It's really something you don't find very often in a lot of places. I can say that now, going out and working in a lot of different places. And, you know, there's great spots, but I do think that, like I said, all of us really love what we do, and enjoy going to work, which is something that can't always be said. And then also, you know, like, our employees right now are just awesome. We've been blessed with great employees for a long time, but it is like a family. And so it's nice to have that dynamic. And then on top of that, I feel like the community is that way as well. You know, this community is just so incredible, the way they wrap around people that need it and support each other, you know, support us as a business, all kinds of things. And so I don't think any of us have any problem with, like, what you're talking about, where you call us and we don't even have a visit. We're not charging you anything for that, but you're a great client, and we, you know, we know that you're going to use us for things, and we're happy to help you when you need help, and not necessarily see anything. We can just kind of talk you through it, and, you know, we have that knowledge to share. And I think in a community like this, that's such an important part, is to know that you can do that. And we people all the time thank me for that. They're just, you know, thank you so much for taking my call. I really appreciate it. I think people understand that that's not, you know, something that you can do everywhere. I mean, a lot of places I've gone, I've had job offers everywhere because people are just desperate, specifically for large animal vets. I'd say maybe especially cattle work. There's a huge need for that all over the place. I've been in some counties that don't have a single vet anywhere, so they're driving like 4 hours to the nearest vet, which is just wild compared to here. So, like you said, we've had a history for a long time. I mean, Mike started this practice, you know, quite a while ago, and there's been good vets the whole time, and that is rare to have that in such a rural place, and to be able to call and know you're getting somebody that knows what they're doing, and also, like you're talking about, just is compassionate and can provide that service, because a lot of places don't have it at all. And I think it's going to become more and more of a problem. You know, my class was probably 90% small animal. focus. So there was only a few of us that ended up going into either mixed or like large animals specifically, usually equine. And then some of those have already switched into small animal, which has been a big trend just across the board in the industry. So it's getting harder and harder to find, one, people who will go to a rural area and work emergency, and then two, people who will do large animal at all. It's just not, it's not an easy job. So a lot of people don't like to do it. Which I can't blame them. It's physically demanding. And then, like we were talking about earlier, the emergency call is definitely a big toll on people. And so, but it's going to become a big, it already is a pretty big problem, and it's going to get a lot worse.
That's interesting. Do you think, I mean, you named a couple great reasons there why that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else there? Do you think that it's intimidating to work on larger animals? Do you feel like it's more about money and where people can live and kind of the lesser demand? And I'm also curious in that if you obviously had a dad who would have never said, you know, you're not physically capable of being a large animal vet.
Right.
But do you think that maybe that's still a story out there, that you need to be this large man to be able to work with cattle and horses and larger critters? Mm-hmm.
Great questions. I like this. Yeah. So I think it's a combo of all of it. So the shift, like I talked about in the small animal, like most people going into small animal is true. But also it's mostly female dominant now. So I like to compare. So like when Dave went to school, Dave is my dad's business partner. I think it was like 80% men at that time. When my dad went to school, it was like 50-50 men, women. And then when I went, it was, I would say 80 to 90% women. And so the shift has been huge over the years in the vet world. And I don't know, I've heard a lot of different commentary on that, and I still am not exactly sure why. I've heard from the admissions folks that it's actually, there's just way fewer men applying to vet school. So it's not like they're just selecting women over men in the application process. It's like men are just not applying like they used to. So I'm not sure. I can't seem to figure out. There doesn't seem to be a really good reason why that is, but that is the trend that we're seeing. And so I think, like I said, the lifestyle as far as the emergency call is part of it. The money factor is definitely part of it, you know, by the, like, if you look at just time spent with like a dog versus a cow, the business makes a lot more money a lot faster on the small animal side versus the large animal. It's just the economics of it. Like, we cannot charge, nobody could afford if we charged the same rate. It's just not how it, that's just not fair. So business wise, a lot of people have stopped providing large animal services even as a business because it's just not as economical for the business. And then I think that there is a big, like you said, I grew up in like such a different mindset. My dad always encouraged, like he had more faith in me than I did for most of my, like, you know, schooling years, which was so nice to have because a lot of people don't have that. And especially, you know, I grew up in this community, so I feel like I had a fair amount of cattle practice. I didn't grow up on a ranch. I actually didn't develop, I really love working with cattle now, but I didn't develop that till I went to college, which is a little odd. I wish I would have gotten it sooner because I could have had some more hands-on experience when I was younger, but it's just, I did a lot of horse things. So I felt pretty good with horses, but working with cattle is a whole different ballgame. And if you don't grow up in it, it's kind of hard to get a foot in the door just in general. And in the vet world, you can get the experience, but it is still hard and you have to work for it. Especially a lot of vet schools just don't focus on it anymore. At least ours, like up in the Northwest, you know, it's not exactly a hot commodity, the cattle industry. So it's not as focused on in our side, probably this whole half of the country, I would say. And so you really had to seek out experiences. So like in undergrad, I did like reproductive palpation. Then I actually got most of my experience. Then I was like hardly got any in vet school. So I got most of my practice. Then I got AI certified. I did a bunch of stuff just in undergrad just because I really liked it. And then in vet school, I sought out that because I really enjoyed cattle and I knew I was going to do it when I got home. So I looked for that experience, but it's really hard. It's so different. So like when Dr. Dave went to school, it was like a huge percentage of cattle work that they did. So he got a lot better experience even just in school than I did. So he'll ask me, he's like, well, didn't you learn that in school? And I'm like, no, Dave, I learned it from you guys. You know, we just didn't get that experience like you did. And so I think that's hard too, is you're not, even if you know you need it, you're not necessarily getting the same level of experience as you used to, just because it's not as popular anymore or not as needed anymore. And then I do think that, you know, women coming out into it, there is a stigma, even in this county. I'd say I'm really blessed here. There are, I mean, the ranchers are some of my biggest cheerleaders here, which is so cool to see. I really appreciate that, because I know, like, just across the board, everybody here has known me since I was a toddler, you know, so like literally since I was a baby. So it's got to be so hard for some people to see me and they're like, you're a doctor now, like you're working on it, what is happening, you know. It's gotta, I just can't even imagine. And so I don't blame people when they are skeptical, because I cannot even imagine. That's got to be just mind-blowing to them, just to see that, you know, yeah. Transition.
You're always 17 in your hometown.
Oh,
right?
My gosh, forever. Yeah. But I would say people have overall, I mean, I've definitely run into some that have an issue, but overall, that's always the case when you're the new person anywhere, right? So it's not a huge surprise. But coming back home, everybody has been really supportive. And I think a lot of people are just thankful I would come home, because they know that it's hard to find vets that'll do it anymore. And they trust me. They know that they know me from when I was young. So even though I'm young, they know that I'll, you know, I'm out to help them and do my best. So that's really helpful. But it is hard. Even like I said, I told you all these things that I tried to do to get experience. The cattle work is some of the hardest to get experience in, just because, you know, I see so many small animals, and the cattle work is so seasonal here, because we are, you know, cow calf. And so everything is on a season, unlike a dairy where you're doing the same thing year round. So it's a little, I don't know, again, it's not easier. It's just that you see it all the time. So it's a little bit more comfortable. And so for me, it's like, you know, we have calving season and it's gone, and you're probably not going to see another calving. You might get one or two, but you're probably not going to see it until next season. And then people have improved so much that calving season is a lot more mild than it used to be anyway, just because of genetics and how people manage. But so it is really challenging. You know, that's not true everywhere. There's certain parts of the country, obviously, that are really heavy in the cattle industry, but for here, you know, last year I went to a couple different conferences. I went to one in Ohio and one in Tennessee, and they're both cattle focused, and for vets. And that was really neat to go just be with people who, most of them were actually like large animal only. Some of them are cattle only. And so I felt a little out of my wheelhouse, but it was cool to see. You know, I felt really comfortable. I could have taught the class I took on preg checking. So that was really cool to see, you know, like our little corner of Oregon. Like, we actually do see quite a bit of cattle here, which is really nice to know, because the Northwest is not exactly known for our cattle.
Yeah.
Countrywide.
Yeah. I think that it might be true that a lot of people don't know how much beef actually gets produced in this little corner of the state.
Yeah.
Because you think of it as, you know, it is challenging, the mm-hmm. terrain here and the season here, but when we have grass, it's the very best. So,
oh my gosh, yeah. I took some hay samples from the county with me on one, because it was a nutrition course for cow-calf operations, and they were hugely impressed by our hay. They could not believe that was our hay. And then they also couldn't believe the price of hay in the county.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a mix. But yeah, it's interesting to see. Well, and just to talk to people how they run cattle so differently across the country. I mean, we don't have byproducts here like a right. lot of places do. And that is, I mean, some places, that's like all they feed their cows most of the year.
Right.
And that's just wildly different than here. I'm like, we can't even, I mean, it's probably cost more to get those shipped in here than it would be than you're saving on other feed products. So
exactly.
Huge
yeah.
differences.
The isolation really limits our ability to sell in kind of its highest valuable form, mm-hmm. right? Or to get cheap products in.
Mm-hmm.
Just really, we don't have the processing around here.
Mm-hmm.
The emergency call part has to be so challenging. And like you said, you were willing to take that on.
Mm-hmm.
When you were growing up and seeing that, I heard you say right away, like, that you and your dad spent time in the backcountry mm-hmm. and you, you know, got to go hunting and things like that. And sometimes when I look at peers who are resistant to go into ranching because their story is they saw their parents just work themselves to death.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, they look at that as misery. And, you know, they're like, why would I ever want to do that?
Right.
And I'm curious to hear your perspective of growing up, because what I witnessed was my family who loved the work. Mm-hmm. So even though there was a lot of it, it was work that we enjoyed doing.
Mm-hmm.
But we also took breaks. Like, we spent time at the lake. We used to water ski a lot. We team roped like 2 nights a week.
Mm-hmm.
We took vacations. We took time to be together as a family outside of work. And I think that that really gave me a foundation to come back to ranching, knowing it was going to be a lot of work, mm-hmm. but also knowing that I could balance that out. Did you have the same experience?
Yeah, for sure. So I used to love to go on emergencies with my dad. We actually talk about it a lot now, because sometimes we'll come in and help each other on emergency, and we love it because we just don't get to do it anymore like we used to. And so I loved doing that with him. I loved going into the clinic and spending time on whatever. And I think, and he loved it too. It was so fun, I think, for him to have me go along with him. And so, and then, like I said, I've met few people more passionate about their job than my dad. And so to have that as like that, you know, he was who I looked up to growing up and spent time with. And that's just such a healthy perspective in your job and your life. But then my family was the same. We traveled a lot growing up. And so every year we would do a vacation somewhere. We usually did like a fifth wheel trip to somewhere in the country. But I mean, we went as far as like the Badlands. So it was like not limited to the Northwest. So, you know, I've been to like most of the national parks this side of the country. We also went to Europe one summer. You know, we were pretty well traveled. Which is a little bit unique, I think, for kids from the county. They don't always have that experience. And I just recently told them that, because I had the opportunity to take some of my family that haven't got the chance to travel to a place that they'd never been, and they haven't really got to go hardly anywhere. And just to see that perspective from them and to know like how blessed I was growing up and getting all the traveling we did, I think that, like you were saying, it's just such a healthy lifestyle. You know, you don't necessarily have to go far or do a lot, but just to have that balance where you're not always working, whatever that looks like, whether that's ranching or our world and the vet world, to have a mix. And like for me right now, it's funny because my husband does work in ranching. He's a cowboy. And so my breaks are a lot of times ranching now. That's what I go do for fun. And I, you know, I go to work with him and I love it because I get to go not talk to people for a day. And he's always lonely because he's always out by himself. So he always wants to go to dinner or something where he can chat with people. So we have this little bit of disconnect. But, you know, I spend my whole day talking to people. And so I love the break to get to go out and just be outside and with the horses or cows or whatever we're doing that day. I really enjoy it, so it's kind of fun. But I think no matter what it is, like, have a hobby and go do that. I think in any job that's so important, and then especially in an isolated place like this, you know, there is a big world outside of this county, and it's really easy to just like put blinders on and headphones on and just ignore everything going on because we can do that here. We're pretty isolated, but it's not really the reality. And it's, I think it's also healthy. You know, I've traveled to, I did a vet trip to Uganda. And then, you know, I did a mission trip early in life to Mexico. And I think some of that's some healthy perspective, because that is just such a huge contrast to here. You know, we have poverty here, but it's just not at the same level. And so that's a good way to also put your life into a little bit of a different perspective, and remind yourself that, you know, we have a pretty awesome life here, and we're blessed to be able to just, it's an old school life. I feel like it's a little bit traditional, and that's why we love it. You know, we get to ignore some of that stuff, but it's important to keep it in mind.
Yeah. I could not agree more. I give a lot of credit to going on exchange in high school, mm-hmm. right? And that, I think it's one of the most important things. And I acknowledge too that I was really lucky to have mm-hmm. a family who let me and supported me
yeah.
doing that when I was younger, so that I carried that forward into my adult life to travel and see other things and experience other places.
Oh yeah.
And leave here to know what it really is to be here.
Right.
Is so important. And I think that, like you said, it really gives you that perspective of how lucky we are, mm-hmm. To not only live in this county, but to live in this country.
And right.
All of the things that it's really easy to take for granted, right? If you don't do that. And I found, I didn't know that I always wanted to come home. Mm-hmm. There was times when I thought maybe not. But at the same time, I always had a home. So it was really easy to travel without this, like, I'm searching for my place in the world. Mm-hmm. Just traveling to see and experience new things. And I think I was really lucky for that, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah, I definitely think... Yeah, I think a lot of people, especially now, isn't that the trend? Like, a lot of people are just out looking for something.
It seems like
it. And
they
can't find it. Yeah,
yeah, it's that community, family, and home that we're so rich in. Mm-hmm. And I think for so many people, it's really hard to find.
Mm-hmm. I think that's true. And yeah, we have that. I mean, like you said, a lot of people, even people who want to leave and don't necessarily know if they'll come back, they know they have a home here. And it just feels like it. I was just talking to a friend who's back in town, and he's been off at school and I don't know that he'll move back here either, but he's like, man, it feels good to be home. You know, mm-hmm. like it's just a really nice feeling to have that like grounded place you can come back to.
Yeah. It's a big word. Home is a really big word.
It
and
is.
That feels good. And that being said, you know, like we touched on a little bit earlier, there's easier places to mm-hmm. be. Right.
Yeah.
So I'd love to hear some stories on that of the challenges of being a vet here. I definitely know there's challenges of, you know, your husband being a cowboy here. He runs in the canyons in some really steep country, mm-hmm. but you're going out to ranches on every corner of this county too. Have there been any like epic tales there?
Oh my gosh, I already have so many, which is crazy. I've only been out 4 years and I feel like I could already write a book. But yeah, I mean, I love it. I love, like, I feel like I drive places and I know so many, like, oh, this person lives here. I've been to that ranch. I've gone here. You know, you start to get a feel because you just do it enough. You know, we're usually out at most ranches, at least pregging or semen testing, you know, some, depending on the ranch, sometimes several times a year. It depends on, you know, what they do, but it's really fun because everybody does it a little different. It doesn't mean it's wrong. You know this in ranching, everybody has an opinion on what's the best way to do things, but it's true. I mean, everybody has to do it a little bit different. And I talked to them about that. It's like, well, that's not how you're running this ranch. You know, you're out on permits. You're not on irrigated pasture all year. You're not going to get those numbers you're looking for because that's just not how it goes when you're ranching like that, you know? And so it's so fun to get to go see how people do things differently. Sometimes less fun. Sometimes you get somewhere where it feels very dangerous. Like the chute, really, they really need to upgrade the chute just for the safety of all involved. But it's still fun. I mean, yeah, I'm out working in chutes that have been there, you know, long before Dave was born, you know, let alone me. But it's so fun. I have, yeah, oh man, especially this time of year, it's calving season. So I have some, you know, like driving out, like way out, like an hour outside of town at 2 a.m. in a blizzard to go do a uterine prolapse. And I get there and she's not caught. So we end up stretching her between an ATV and a truck with toe straps. And I'm just like, this, like, nobody teaches you this in vet school. This is never in the curriculum, like how to survive the situation. And, but you just do it. And like, that's the thing. My favorite quote during calving season, I always tell anybody I'm working with, it's calving season is a team sport. And like, you're going to have to get, like, we're all involved here, which is so true. Like, whether it's a prolapse or the calving, you know, like, and cows are just that way in general, right? Like, it's just, you got to have everybody on board. But I love that. Like, I think that's why I like working with the cattle so much, is that, you know, you're expected to do your job and then I'm expecting them to do theirs, right? So I'm going to show up and I expect them to be ready to get rolling. And if not, like, maybe give me a call ahead of time. And then they're expecting me to keep rolling and let them know if I'm not going to be able to or whatever it is. And we're all doing it together. We're all working like a team. And I really like that part of it because you're all relying on each other. And then you stand around chatting for half an hour when you're done. And that's just like not, you know, that's not a normal thing in a lot of places because that's like, you know, wasted time, quote unquote, but I don't think it is at all. You know, you're building relationships with these people, and they're some of my favorite people, you know, like you're there at 2 a.m. in the middle of a blizzard and you're just like, why do we do this? Why are we? Or like I had to do a C-section on a cow down in a trailer. Like he hauled it to the clinic. We couldn't get her up. She was paralyzed in the back end. And it's like, what do you do? Like you can only do the best you can with the situation you're given in any time ranching in general, in the vet world in general. Like it's just, oh man. And so, you know, she lived through that. But the whole time I was telling him, I'm like, she is going to die. Like there is literally no way none of this is good. Like this whole situation is so bad, but it is what it is, you know, like you just have to deal with it. And yeah, she made it, which I never would have bet money on her. But oh man, they're so, cattle especially, there's so many good ones because, you know, they always put themselves in those situations where you're like, what are we, why are we in the middle of a pond right now? How did we get here? Why did we get here? Oh my gosh. Yeah. But it makes for some really good stories later. It really is horrible in the moment. It really
yeah.
is.
Yeah. I hope you write a book. I think that would be epic. That's awesome. I want to circle back really quickly because I didn't mean to miss it, but what was Uganda like?
Oh, yeah. So it was actually just before COVID. It was like January of 2020. I went to Uganda for 2 weeks and it was kind of an odd one. It was like a separate trip. It wasn't actually like through a vet program or anything, but I traveled. It was actually with a vet and her church. So we went over there and we were, so it was like a mission vet trip. So we did like a rabies clinic where we rabies vaccinated a bunch of dogs there. And then we did some spay neuter clinics. And so we were just spaying and neutering a bunch of their pets. I mean, it's really different, obviously, standards than what we have here. But they just do not have vet care there at all, really. They have some, but it's really limited. And so we did some spay neuter clinics. They're just out on a table, out like on this deck in the middle of Uganda. It's very dirty, nothing like here, very different standards. But that was really fun. So it was me and that vet who traveled over there, and then her daughter, who's my friend, and she has been a vet tech for a long time, and she's actually an EMT as well. But so she did a lot of the tech work, and then her mom and I did a lot of the like spay neuter, and then we did, like I said, rabies, and then we would kind of see some other things, and then we got to go work with livestock, which was super fun. They have some really different cattle over there compared to here. They have some of the zebu, which we do have some of, and then they have the Ankole, which I had never seen before. They're really interesting. I'll have to look them up.
Are those like?
They're similar to zebu. They're kind of that like Bos Indicus type cow. Mm-hmm. But they have these really tall horns. They're really unique. I've never seen anything like it before. But they're kind of similar to the zebu. So we got to go out. And so the thing about Uganda is, especially rural Uganda, you have to wear skirts. If your knees are showing, so if you wear pants or if your skirt is too short, it's considered offensive or kind of offensive. And so it was my first time working cattle in skirts. That was really interesting. And sandals, actually. I was wearing my Keen sandals, but that was so fun. It's very obviously, pretty much everything they do is completely different than here. So they have alleyways, but no chutes. And the alleyways are, you know, pretty precarious. But what they do is they just shove the alley full and work them down the alley. And then even like their handling, so the cattle are a lot smaller than here. So they like hold the mouth when they're trying to hold. So like these guys were like tribal members. It was pretty remote. They would come and like hold for you. So I'd be giving shots or.
So just with their hand, they just grab a hold of the lip?
Like the bottom jaw. No, the bottom jaw.
The bottom jaw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They warned the vet. We were out. So we went to Uganda and we worked with a vet who's been there for 30 years. She's lived there. And so she works with the people there, which was really neat to work with somebody who's that well established. And so she was warning me ahead of time about some of these. She's like, just so you know, like they do things really differently. So like, don't tell them not to do it. Like that's how they know how to do it. And so, yeah, we brought some stuff with us over there, and then she has access to some there. But you're obviously very limited on treatment. The diseases there are really different than we have here. There's some that are the same, but in general, they're pretty different. So that was really cool to see. And then just to get to experience, I mean, that is, it is wildly different than here. So getting to experience that was really neat. And then on the other part of it, we went and we started churches there too. We were helping with some churches they'd recently planted way, way out in remote villages. And that was, they are just such a joyful people. So they are like huge pranksters, jokesters. They like love to make people laugh. So that was so fun. And then like their worship is like, everybody's dancing and singing, like it's so different than here. And so I learned a lot from them, like all across the board. It was really, really neat to go experience that. So yeah, we did that for 2 weeks, and it's very different. It's very rugged living in that time because we were out, you know, the cities aren't like that. They're well established, but we were not spending a lot of time there. So yeah, I was actually just talking to one of the techs at our clinic because she really wants to go on a trip like that. So I was talking to her. I was like, okay, I'll start putting feelers out again and see if we can do another trip, because it's really a neat experience. And getting to, you know, I feel like they bless me as much as we bless them, getting to provide some of those services for them. So that was such a, like, what a great experience. I really, really enjoyed it.
That's so cool. Yeah, that's awesome that you got to do that. And mm-hmm. Maybe, yeah, maybe go back, maybe help somebody else experience that. Yeah, their way of herding cattle and working cattle, I've only ever seen videos of, mm-hmm. But makes me think that we're pretty lazy and weak most times.
It's pretty different, yeah, what we do. Well, it's just, yeah, it's just such a different, I mean, they're not out running big herds like we are here, and they're not. They eat them, but it's not beef animals like here, so it's really different. And they're just really limited on what they have access to, so they just have to make work with, you know, whatever they have available to them.
Yeah.
Which is, they're very resourceful.
But it's what we're all doing, right? When you said, yeah, you know, don't tell them how to work cattle, you're like, you can't do that anywhere.
No. So, yeah, you should not be doing that
whether
anywhere.
Whether you're in Omaha or in Uganda.
It's like, very true.
Not going to tell anybody. I want to talk about beef really quick, because I'm curious, as a vet, mm-hmm. If you ever get into the position of advocating for antibiotics, mm-hmm. and some of these vaccines and things that tend to, some of it's obviously very valid, some of it's on trend, but in people's concerns about what we're doing,
right,
to animals that we are going to ultimately consume, mm-hmm. I think is interesting versus how sometimes people are willing to treat their dog. They feel really safe, yeah, and about treating their pets with some of these things, mm-hmm. but then if we're going to consume it, the perspective and the concern is very different. And I wonder if you could just speak to that with your expertise.
Yeah, that's a great question. I do think that there is such a huge gap between consumers and producers. And so I saw that especially when I went back to school. I mean, it's pretty amazing when you know, here in the county, most people have a general idea, but you go places where people have no idea how their food is produced. And so I understand their concerns. But, you know, my perspective, it's so hard. I have a hard time with some of the programs that have become really popular, and not to criticize ranchers, because I think they are just doing whatever they can to make it work for them as a business. But I have a hard time because I feel like I'm really limited on some of my treatments. So, you know, I might recommend antibiotics, but the producer really doesn't want to do it because they're in a program that won't allow that. I mean, they'll allow them to, but they have to pull that animal from the program. And I think, you know, if I'm telling them that I think that's the best treatment option, and I think that's what's best for the animal, it's a little bit hard to see, you know, we're using it within withdrawal periods. And, you know, if you're using it in the right way, then that antibiotic, that drug is not entering the food chain, you know, and they do a lot of testing. I mean, you know this more than I do, but they do so much testing. And so when you're doing things in the proper way, then, you know, we raise our own beef and I eat it. And I am more than happy to use antibiotics on what I'm consuming, and I do vaccinate them. And so I think, you know, there's been more studies on some of that than most of the foods we eat, in my opinion. I think that there are way bigger problems in the food world that are not being regulated whatsoever. And beef is not one of them. You know, it's been such a hot topic for so long. So I do think, you know, I hate to see animals that I consider, I don't know that they're suffering, that's a little bit of a strong word, but they're, you know, they're in pain and they have this ailment, and we're trying not to treat them the way that would be the best way to treat them and the fastest way to treat them, because we're trying to avoid, you know, pulling them from this program, or just some place people just don't want to use it. And I understand where they're coming from, because there is a lot of fear with that. But I also really trust that, you know, if we're using these things in the right way and we're following withdrawal times, and most of those withdrawal times are like better safe than sorry kind of thing. You know, they're not doing it like right on the line, like they're being extra safe. And a lot of times, you know, especially in this county, people do a really good job with, you know, like BQA standards. So like making sure injections stay in the neck and things like that, or places where it's not going to be a cut of meat. And so, you know, I think that's like another level of safety in those products. And then same with vaccines, you know, they have withdrawal times as well. But I would much rather know that my animal is vaccinated. You know, they don't need to be quote, like over vaccinated. Like we try to set up programs that, you know, first of all, they're things we actually think they need to begin with, but then also, you know, we don't need to be doubling up on things or giving them more than their body can handle. And then again, we're following withdrawal times, but we're also making sure that they're staying healthy. And then maybe we can avoid using antibiotics if we can keep them healthy, you know, on the front end, like we talked about at the beginning. You know, that's preventative medicine. You know, it's the same as us vaccinating our dogs. Obviously, they're not entering the food chain, hopefully. It's the same idea, right? Yeah. Yeah. Or ourselves. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I think as a producer, sometimes it is really challenging. You know, we don't use any antibiotics on any of our cattle that we're using for beef. Mm-hmm. And it is a challenge to know when it's okay.
Right.
And when it's not okay, and making the decision. You know, you're caring for this animal, you're in charge of its care, you're responsible for its well-being. Mm-hmm. And if it needs an antibiotic to be healthy, but then that might mean that that animal no longer has a place in your program. And so for us, that means taking it to the sale,
right?
Which may end up in not a great life,
right? For that,
right? Mm-hmm. And so, I do think that that's really challenging. And the bigger challenge there is, how do we communicate to consumers
in
a way that actually gets to them?
I think that's really because like you said, like your ranch does that, and I know most actually here are in a program. They're all really different, but they have, you know, similar something like that, where you get to that point where you have to make a decision. And sometimes we can, sometimes you can like go different ways, or there's more traditional routes or whatever, that you don't have to jump to medication. And then other times it's like, we just like, this is what we have to do, or they are going to be either suffering or in pain or whatever. And it is really hard because every ranch is so different, as far as, like you said, you guys maybe don't have some guys have a separate program where they'll put, you know, them into that, and then they can just run them separately or pull them later, however they do it. And then other people don't, like you said, where they'll take them to the sale, and it's not always a great alternative. So it's really hard to weigh and balance. But it is hard because I think the beef industry is so different. We're driven so much more by consumers than a lot of places or a lot of industries, where, you know, I was talking to a guy one time, and he was just like, I just have never gotten over the fact that we don't set our prices, that it's like one of the only businesses that is like that, you know, that you're always relying on other people, and it's never very predictable, you know. And I think that's really true. And it's especially hard because there is such a big gap between us and the consumer. So we've been enjoying, you know, we raise some, just a small group, and my brother lives in Portland, so we sell some to them. And it's really fun to get to kind of communicate that with them, because they have no idea, you know, it's all new to them. And we just love seeing how excited they are about knowing where their beef comes from. And I know you get this a lot, because you guys are really founded in that, but it's so cool to be able to tell people and explain why we do things and how we do things, and then, you know, send them a picture of a really happy steer out on a grass pasture, you know, like they just love that. And so I think that it's going to get better with, I think that's one of the few things that is going to get better with how big social media is now. I do see a lot more like ranching and people in the ranching world getting into socials and spreading that word. And I think that there's, you know, that I cannot imagine doing that, because I think that's so hard to do, and not like you're dealing with a lot of backlash from people. But I think that that is how we're going to start, you know, I don't know how else people are going to learn, you know, word of mouth, you can only do so much.
Yeah.
Especially here, we're really isolated in how much are we actually talking to other people. But I think that that realm is making it really different and kind of bringing a new stage where, you know, even though we're isolated, we can still have a big audience.
Yeah. Those who tell the story rule the world, mm-hmm. right? And I think that's why, you know, if there is kind of this shortage in maybe women going into large animal vets, mm-hmm. hearing your story matters, and that this is possible and mm-hmm. this is rewarding and this is, you know, something that you maybe shouldn't shy away from or maybe don't need to shy away from if it's intimidating. And if there is more demand similar to the consumer, they're really the ones with the power. Right. So if there were more, you know, vet students interested in large animal, then obviously they would change their practicals and things to,
yeah, to go focus on that. Yeah.
Include horses and cattle. I think that we're getting close. I want to ask you before we wrap up about being a rodeo queen. and the reason why is I know it's something that we both did.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's something that I never thought I would do
mm-hmm.
because I wasn't that girl.
Mm-hmm.
That was my story of it, right? I'm not that girl. So you talked about hunting and going to the backcountry and fishing and being kind of a daddy's girl
mm-hmm.
and then becoming a rodeo queen, right? And so I am so glad that I did it
mm-hmm.
and I totally advocate for it mm-hmm. to this day. And so I just want to ask you what you thought of it before you did it and what you did after. And then as you've traveled around, if you've ever had the opportunity to tell somebody that you're a has-been rodeo queen mm-hmm. and that fun reaction.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. So it feels like it's been a long time, doesn't it?
It feels like it's been a very long time. Yeah. Definitely the has-been crowd for
sure.
Oh,
man. Yeah. So I actually almost didn't do it. I kind of always thought I would because I did horse 4-H like all growing up, like from fourth grade. I've always been the horse crazy girl since I was tiny. Like I started riding horses when I was 4 pretty actively. And my parents never did. So that was new. You know, I was the one that got us into that.
As a 4-year-old, you were like, I demand we have horses.
My first word was horse.
Oh my gosh.
When I was a baby. So I think they knew they were in for it pretty quickly. And I think my dad had always wanted to get into packing. And so I think it was like a pretty easy jump for him to start learning. And then obviously he was a vet at the time and worked on horses a lot. And so, he knew enough to get started at least. And so we got into it pretty young. And so I did that, you know, I did 4-H all through, and then, like I said, yeah, dad and I used to go ride. And so I almost didn't do it. I was trying to flake last minute. I don't know, probably because I was a teenager and we're hormonal and we're issues. But my dad, again, is the one who convinced me to do it. He really wanted me to. He really thought it would be good for me. And I loved it. I was with Celia. There was only two of us on that year for the Chief Joseph Day's court. And we were like, it was so great. She is awesome. And so it was such an easy year, which was really nice. Our parents got along really well. So it was we had such a fun year. And I loved it. I learned so much in that, like public speaking, how to communicate with people effectively, like how to be in front of people and present yourself. I don't think I had any idea how to do my makeup before then. Like I was also not that girl doing my hair. My mom was so frustrated. She also loved it. She had a great year or summer, but she was like, I never thought I would spend so much time curling your already curly hair. Like that was just wild to her. And then unfortunately I went on to do Tuckerettes for 3 years. So, so she really had it coming. So my mom had to help me with that every year, but I loved it. I still talk about my experiences quite a bit, especially like when talking to younger girls, I feel like, yeah, I think, well, I mean, that's just not, yeah. People have like learned it about me when I've been out and it's just such a, I feel like here it's like expected almost if you're right. In those circles, you know, but like when you go other places, they're like, you did what? You what? Like you're waving in a circle as you rode around? Like what are you doing? They just have no idea.
That still exists in the world.
What?
Right.
Yeah. But it's so, I thought, oh man, I gained so much from it. Like same as some of the like FFA and things I did in high school. Like all of that was just like career development, you know, social, economics, business, all of that. It's a pretty amazing way you can get out of it. And rodeo is definitely that for me. I'm still really involved. Most of the board and like people involved in the rodeo are our clients. So I see them all the time. And I just really, you know, that rodeo is a really big thing for our community. And so it was really fun to be, you know, they really, I thought they did a good job, you know, telling us, you know, you are the advocate for this rodeo. And so that's a big deal when you're that age and it's a big thing to do, but the, you know, you step up and do it. And a lot of girls do, and you just grow. Like, it's amazing to see some of like when you start to finish, you know, how much more confidence you have and, you know, ability to interact with people, and public speaking is huge for sure. And then even like with my horse, I gained so much. It really pushed me into, you know, like I said, I did Tuckerettes afterwards, and that was a huge transition from even from rodeo court to go to that. And I feel like it hugely benefited me as a horsewoman. You know, that's a whole different set of skills you need to have to be able to do that. I highly encourage anybody I talk to do it if it's within reason for them, because I think it's so great. I think there are so many skills to be gained from it, and it's fun. Those memories are so fun to look back on. I mean, Celia and I still reminisce on some of our fun court stories, because you have that when you're traveling together all summer.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think some of the resistance is the girliness, the like makeup, the so much hairspray. Mm-hmm. I think there's less now, but
I don't know.
So many curls and so much hairspray and glitter and all of that that may not seem like your thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then just, I think there's this underlying story that girls can't get along,
mm-hmm.
right? That if you're going to pit each other, because it is a competition.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you're competing to be a princess or a queen.
Mm-hmm.
Just seems really silly, but it's part of it.
Oh, yeah.
And there's this story there that's going to be awful. Right. That mm-hmm. it's going to be catty and all these things that we learn about being a girl. And for me, that summer was spent riding a horse mm-hmm. really fast,
mm-hmm.
Signing autographs for little kids.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking to people, learning how to represent something that's larger than yourself.
Yep.
So learning about what that means and how to hold yourself with that level of composure and mm-hmm. grace and all those important skills. And then you got to go travel everywhere with your friends.
Mm-hmm.
So looking back, you know, it's like, how else would you ever want to spend a summer as a teenage girl, right? and you did have to go door to door and knock on strangers' doors and try to sell them something.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to try to build confidence in yourself, I don't know a better way to do it and push those boundaries. And such a fun summer. I definitely advocate it. also comes with a lot of funny stories for a lifetime.
Yes. And I think that like, you had a great point. I mean, there is a lot of like either assumed drama or there can be drama associated with it. But I think that, you know, it's hard for me to speak to because like we just didn't have that our year, but we didn't bring it, you know, like we didn't bring that to the table. We were really laid back and, you know, we were really respectful and tried to do, it's basically a job, you know, and you are paid for that job. That's what the ticket sales is about. And so I think that's some skills to learn in itself, is learning to be in a team and doing mm-hmm. it well and still managing to have a good time. That carries through. I mean, how many times since then have you been on a team that you didn't necessarily love?
Yeah.
But if you, you know, have a good attitude and you do your best and bring your best self into that, then, you know, that's a great skill to learn at that age too, because that does not get easy. In fact, it gets significantly harder later in life, but it's going to be, you know, just because you don't necessarily either, maybe you're not the best of friends to begin with, but you can still, you know, there's a lot of life skills to be gained from that as well. Learning how to be in a team.
Totally agree. Be a rodeo queen.
Yeah.
If you have the chance. What's next for you? What are you excited about?
Ooh, surviving calving season. We're kind of at the tail end right there. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Well, I just got married last year. So right now, and then we bought a house. Actually, we got engaged, bought a house, and got married within 2 months. So it was kind of a whirlwind of a summer. Yeah. But we've been loving pouring time into our place. And so that's where I'm at outside of the vet world. And then we're kind of moving and shaking in our clinic a little bit because Dave's retiring this year. So that's going to bring some big changes. So I'm planning to buy into the practice. So that's a big deal for me. So we're looking forward to that transition as much as we're very upset about losing Dr. Dave. That's going to be a huge hit to the clinic. So we're pretty upset about that.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm in the groove now where I've seen and done a lot of things quite a few times. So I'm enjoying myself a lot more as a vet and feeling a lot more confident. And it makes it a lot more enjoyable just overall, where I don't feel like I'm constantly learning all the time. You know, you're always going to be learning, but once you get over that hump a little bit. So I'm in that phase right now, that era of my vet life. So I'm loving that. So it's been really fun. It's a lot of, you know, those are some big changes in both my life outside of the vet world and in it. And so that's been pretty fun. And then I've been, like I said, I did some conferences last year, specifically with the beef side. And so I'm hoping to bring some of that to the table a little bit now that I'm not in the midst of trying to plan a wedding and buy a house and things like that. So yeah, hoping to bring some more of that into our clinic is kind of a, you know, again, it's not a big moneymaker for us to do stuff like that, but I just love the idea of just being, you know, full circle for our beef clients and providing some of those things that we just don't have easy access to that out here. And so, and it's easier for me to do that where I kind of know everything that they're doing in their program for the most part, and like tying in nutrition and things like that is really interesting. So yeah.
Very cool.
Lofty goals, but
yeah,
you know.
Good. Well, congratulations on all
you.
Of that.
Thank you.
And your era right now is awesome. Incredible. And just, yeah, I know that we're just so grateful that you did choose to come back, and that we're going to continue to have the same level of vets here in this community, and we can't do it without you. So
it feels good to be supported by people like you.
Yeah. And thanks for doing this with me today.
Oh my gosh,
this
it was so fun. Thank you so much for having me.
I just want to take a second and thank everyone who's written a review, who has sent mail, who's sent emails, who's sent messages. Your support is incredible. And I also love running into you at trade shows and events and just out on the hillside when we're hunting. I think that that's fantastic. I hope you guys keep adventuring as hard and as often as you can. Art for the Six Ranch podcast was created by John Chatelain and was digitized by Celia Harlander. Original music was written and performed by Justin Hay, and the Six Ranch podcast is now produced by Six Ranch Media. Thank you all so much for your continued support of the show, and I look forward to next week when we can bring you a brand new episode.